I'm Alex McPherson. I'm here for some research on a podcast I'm working on.
A cold case. A local woman who went missing 20 years ago from here.
We are a newspaper revealing facts, not speculation.
If there is something wrong here, it needs to be brought to light.
The cause of death was CO2 poisoning, but there are questions that remain.
I saw what you did with your last podcast. I want to clear my name.
I'm just trying to get to the truth.
Are you sure we're not just doing some crazy conspiracy thinking?
If there's anyone who can find it, it's you.
Hey, lovely listeners, and welcome to Real Crime Profile. I'm Laura Richards, former New Scotland Yard criminal behavioural analyst and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service. And with me today in the booth is...
Lisa Zambetti, casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds and Legacy Days of Our Lives watcher.
Ooh, a little hint as to who our very, very special guest in the studio is. Today we're joined by...
Ali Sweeney.
Well, we're all very excited to have Alison here, and I'm sure most of our listeners will know exactly who Ali Sweeney is. She's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful actor. She's also a good friend of mine, and many of you have probably seen her and know her for her portrayal of Samantha Sammy Brady on the NBC soap opera Days of Our Lives. And she's played that role for quite a long time.
Yeah, we don't have to do the math on that. 20 some odd plus years.
You were just a little infant when they introduced you.
I know.
And everyone's seen you grow up, like literally through the eye, the lens of a camera, which is amazing.
It's great. You meet so many fans all the time who talk about, we grew up together. They had kids at the same time my character did. You know, it still happens all the time. I love it.
I bet. Now, in this role, you earned a Daytime Emmy Award nomination, 4 Soap Opera Digest Awards, and a fan-voted Daytime Emmy Award, which is amazing.
Yes, thank you. I feel always honored.
We've got to roll call your achievements.
I know, Yeah, I feel like we go back a long way. We could skip to the... to the end.
Well, we're not going to skip to the end. You know, other people may know you for another role. In 2007, you became the host of The Biggest Loser, and you were there for quite some time too, weren't
you? Yeah, I did 13 seasons hosting The Biggest Loser, and, you know, I still am Facebook friends with so many of those contestants, and they're just amazing people, all of them, actually, and a lot of them changed their lives. A lot of them found new... paths, new ideas. And then, you know, you just meet people every day who say, oh, I wanted to lose 10 pounds, 5 pounds, 100 pounds, whatever it was. And just knowing you're, I don't know, I guess, hopefully part of the solution, you know?
Right.
Absolutely. It's really inspiring. I'm sure that show
inspired
so many people.
And super impressive. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, because you've got a new venture that Lisa and I are really excited by. And I know Jim really wanted to be here too in the studio, but there's a lot of things going on with Criminal Minds right now. So he sends his apologies.
Oh,
but
thank you.
We're really excited for your new... It's a movie, right?
Yes, a series of movies. I developed a character who, ironically, is a podcaster. And Hallmark has a great channel called Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, where they focus on female leading characters who are crime solvers. And they've really tapped into a market of people who love mysteries, good old-fashioned, you know, whodunits. And I thought this was the perfect avenue for them. So I've developed this character, Alex, in a series of movies. We have premiering 3 movies February into March, and then we're developing more for next year. So it's ongoing.
That's so great. Laura and I were lucky enough to be able to watch the first one, and it is such a fun ride. And you're just absolutely beautiful in it, and lovely and funny and tough. And you get to do all kinds of crazy stunts.
Yeah, and, that was fun.
It's kind of almost like a throwback, almost to a, I mean, I hate to compare it, but it was kind of like A Murder, She Wrote, as Laura said to me, and it really is
new,
true.
New contemporary, kind of much more upbeat, and with the whole podcaster element in, which I love. I just think that's so cool, that twist, that you're a podcaster on a mission to get justice.
Yeah.
it kind of chimes with us, right, Lisa?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're just tapping right into what really is going on with people being kind of grassroots sourcing of trying to solve mysteries and really try to find missing people and try to find out what happened to people. So you're tapping right into it.
And that's where it came from, is that I am a fan of you both and podcasting in general and all the true crime, you know, armchair detectives who are out there trying to figure out what happened, trying to right the wrongs and correct the injustices that are still out there or the old ones that never got resolved. And I just think it taps into something in me as a fan and a listener. And so I knew that the audience, you know, especially the Hallmark audience, would get on board for the same feeling, because what I like about what Hallmark has done is they've created sort of a safe space mm-hmm. where you can get involved in the story, and it is scary and dangerous and there are clues to be solved, but in the end it is still Hallmark that you know it's going to be okay. You're not going to really get super gory. You're not going to...
I was going to say, yeah, there wasn't that, like on our show, it can be very, very hard to watch Criminal Minds because they really do go for they push the boundaries.
Yeah.
And this one was safer in that respect.
But I think that everyone has its space, right? And mm-hmm. I think what people sign up for Criminal Minds know what they're getting into. And I think when people come to Hallmark, they want to feel taken care of. They want to know that their kid can walk in the room, they can watch with their parent or their grandparent, and everyone's going to enjoy it together. And for me personally, I love that my kids can watch it. Mm-hmm. And my daughter is quite cutthroat. She's 10 and she's suspicious of everybody. Like out of the gate, she's like, she did it. No, he did it.
Yeah.
No, they did it. Like she has all sorts of theories.
Audiences are so savvy now. We're constantly running up against that in the writer's room. Like, how do you fool people? How do you take them along for a journey? Because they're looking for those clues.
And in casting also, you know, that's really hard too, because you find actors that you really like, but they just look guilty.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, oh, I can't.
Oh, yes. That happens.
You could
all
cast
the time.
Them maybe as the red herring, but you can't. You can't make them the one that's actually done it. You have to find those fresh faces that people wouldn't see coming.
I love the cast in this. And you shot this in
Vancouver.
Vancouver. So there's some great Canadian actors in that cast. And talk about the guy who plays your foil.
Ben Ayres is Drew, and I think he's such a talented actor. He's out of Vancouver. He did a show in Toronto for a while, Saving Hope, and he was playing a doctor there, which I always think must be the hardest role in television or anywhere, like having to list off all those medications as if, you know, it's no big deal.
Right.
But he's such a nice guy, a good actor. And I think he really came into this role of playing sort of the crusty old journalist who likes things the old-fashioned way and still keeps a notebook and a pen. And she's coming into it with this, you know, newfangled genre that he doesn't even want to learn about.
Right.
And so there's the clash right from the beginning. But it's fun, you know. I mean, you want people to have that tension, and of course I think the audience, as you said, is so wise that they kind of go in knowing, oh, I see. Mm-hmm. I see what they don't see.
I see the sparks flying.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, you know, he's a little bit prickly when you first meet him. I didn't feel he was kind of so, you know, old school and crusty, though. He still seemed like a kind of a trendy guy.
You're right.
But he was officious in the way that he was managing you, you know, of knowing that there's an old school way of maybe telling stories or doing things. But I love that whole play out, you know, at the start, and you don't really know. And there's a number of twists that I think people will be surprised at, which I kind of enjoyed.
And, oh, good.
And knowing you as well and our conversations that we've had. But I really did love the fact, you know, it's about a case that resonates with your character,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, you knew her when you were younger and then she disappears. And it seems very reminiscent of cases, certainly that I've had some involvement with, not necessarily in the workspace, but talking about. And I know, you know, when we come up with storylines, sometimes people take different bits from real cases.
Exactly.
And it felt to me a little bit like that. It might not be familiar to other people, though. But were there certain cases that inspired you or any podcasts you listened to?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it is what I wanted to honor was this true crime genre, and people who do follow the space will pick up on certain clues, certain things that maybe strike a chord. It's definitely inspired by a lot of different cases, so I don't know that there's one in particular, but certainly the Maura Murray case is one that stands out for me as one that, like, caught so many people's attention for
right,
more than a decade now, and has developed such a attention and podcasts and shows and stuff. So I really was aware that, you know, there were some elements to that case that I wanted to resolve for me. Like, right. As a storyteller, I wanted to give her a happily ever after, I suppose. As Alex and Drew are solving the crime, they put up all the clues and kind of re-identify who's who and what's happening and how does that clue relate to that person in a way that an investigator would, but also to serve the podcast. And then she kind of re-narrates it so that that helps us keep the audience up to the very second, you know, thinking with Alex and Drew.
It's your first movie, is that right, in terms of your executive producing it?
Yes, you developed it. Brought it all to Hallmark. It's sort of the first time I've done all of the different roles, worn all the hats at the same time. So that's a big job, too, is, you know, I start from the very beginning where we pitched them the idea and the premise, and we had sort of an outline, if you will, or like something, some pitch document, and we took it into Hallmark, and they met with us, and I'll never forget this meeting because it was sort of an hour meeting about that story that we had come up with and their notes and reviewing and, you know, just like any network conversation where you're talking about, like, how can we actually get this on air? This is the changes or these are the adjustments or what were you thinking here? And they give really good notes of, which is funny, but they say like, oh, a bad guy, you know, they would never do that. They would never make that mistake. And I'm like, actually, I could give you 37 examples of cases where people make mistakes.
They can and they do.
And they do.
We cover, you know, with psychopaths, many of them get caught because they're reckless at the longer term planning.
Right.
You know, and the more they get away with something, then the much more likely they are to make a mistake because it's that kind of complacency and the arrogance that, you know, where they haven't caught me now. So, the real life side. And I guess because you listen to so many different podcasts, I know you're a big fan of one of Lisa's favorite Bobs, Bob Ruff and Truth and Justice.
Bob Ruff, actually, I called him about there's a scene in the first movie regarding a fire.
Yes.
And I wanted a line about the evidence. And I had a whole talk with him about the situation that I was setting up and that I needed it to be enough to compel the fireman on scene, the investigator, to be suspicious, but not enough that the cop is completely wrong for not following up on it. But, you know, I wanted that middle of the road. And so he had tons of lines of dialogue for me. It was so great and helpful. So shout out to Bob. Thank you so
good
much.
Bob.
Behind the scenes, Goss. I love that.
It is. We love you, Bob.
It was so great. And anyway, so at the end of that meeting, we pitched around all the ideas and how that movie was going to go. And at the very end, they said, and we would like three more if you could. We were like, wait, what? Hold on.
That's called a very successful pitch, right?
Yeah, great exactly. Words.
You go
great
in for one, then they want to get three more on top of that. That's
so
incredible.
So it was kind of a whirlwind year, and we ended up making three what I hope are great movies for them, and they're airing the 17th, the 24th, and then March 3rd.
So talk about your character a little bit and what brings her into this world and brings her to town and all that.
So Alex is a woman who is sort of adrift. She has recently left her career to take care of her mom, who is ill. And this is, I think a lot of it's backstory for me in developing it. I'm not sure how much of it necessarily came across in the first movie, but it's something we want to play on as we move along. And she went and traveled with her mom. And then when her mom became ill, she was in the hospital and ended up sort of using the podcast setup to help find a missing girl in this town. And we sort of established that in the beginning of the movie that she had one success in podcasting. She found a little girl that was missing, and the podcast helped make that happen. It brought attention to it. It got people talking, and it, you know, solved the problem.
And the podcast is called Recovered, right?
And the podcast is called Recovered. And so then her mother passes away, and she doesn't know what to do with herself. And she thinks back on this girl that she knew who had been missing for 20-plus years. And she decides to come home to Harrington, Pennsylvania, and do something about it. I really liked, obviously, there's so many podcasts that come to mind, but Up and Vanished and is just one that I think, you know, and The Teacher's Pet is another one. And I, in fact, when that headline came out, I sent it to my network executive, Jessica, in the instant it hit the newspapers, like, see, podcasts are, you know, it really is happening. So I love that our movie is sort of reflective of what's really going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's very on point because there is a line where you were explaining to Gina, the missing woman's mother, about podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is right in the zeitgeist where you're saying, you know, new leads can happen. You can find new lines of inquiry. New witnesses can come forward. That more evidence, you know, may be found by talking, you know, on a podcast. People contact you. And it's so it's just great interweaving, you mm-hmm. know, what's currently going on in the zeitgeist.
And I thought the mom's character was really honest, too, in the conflict that she felt of course, she wants to find her daughter, but she also had this feeling of not wanting to dig up the past, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. and she was really conflicted and how when you're the person trying to help, you don't understand why they would be reticent. And yet I thought that was a really realistic character as well, that she felt sort of torn as to what she wanted to do. She's willing to help. She gives her tools and clues, but at the same time, she doesn't really want to talk about it. And
just opening up all of that emotion when you've kind of tried to put it away.
Right.
I thought that was definitely authentic for sure.
And then there's another podcast I listened to when I, you know, right after Serial was I listened to a podcast called Accused. And that journalist did a fantastic job of investigating this case that was actually from the 60s, if I remember correctly, and right during all those serial killer things that were becoming so prominent at the time. And she at one point interviews someone that I found myself staring at my car radio like, oh, dear, you sound in danger right now. This person might have something to hide. And now you're just this like 21st century journalist trying to bring up all these old issues and
asking questions, rattling a lot of cages. I mean,
yeah, you might find yourself really in jeopardy. And all of a sudden it hit me that this is really a perfect situation to replicate on camera, because it is dangerous. I mean, there are people with a lot of secrets and things to hide, and it might not even be the original crime. It might be something else. And once you start digging, they're going to work to protect it.
And so, you know what, Ali, what's just springing to mind, and we've had a conversation about this, Abducted in Plain Sight, which everyone seems to be talking about right now. And so many people have asked us, will we cover that particular case? We will at some point. We will get to it because there are many
others. I'm sure there's a list.
There is a list. And of course, you know, you messaged me to say, oh my goodness, have you seen this? Because even with that case, I mean, so many different things happen over a period of time. And then you get people asking questions. Yeah. You know, and people can lie for all sorts of reasons or withhold the truth.
Right.
You know, and so if you get someone who's well-intentioned going into these situations asking questions, you know, of something that has been buried a long time ago, yes, there can be risk there. But also in how you deal with families, you know, it's not easy. And your character goes back to the missing woman, Gina's mother, who you know, but you're still very respectful to her. And you're asking her to tell you all these things that are very, very difficult. But you don't always know the reality of why and how you work with victims, how you advocate for them. You know, there is a very specialist skill set. And I think sometimes people do in real life overlook that.
Yeah.
You know, you set up a podcast, you know, and I say this often, when you watch Grey's Anatomy, just because you watch who was Dr. McDreamy do brain surgery, that doesn't mean to say, you know, when someone's being diagnosed that you are now fully equipped to do brain surgery. But I think sometimes people
listen to Dr. Death and that'll scare you straight for a second.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, someone develops a problem in your family health-wise, you're not going to speak to somebody who's been listening to a lot of podcasts about health. You're going to want to speak to the experts. So there are these points where things can bleed over. So certain aspects of crime, and I love the fact that you called up Bob Ruff to ask specifically and get advice because you wanted to make it as authentic as possible.
Well, and I did ask you too. I have a case working on too, and I was like, I just have all these details. I want to make sure that when we're stretching the boundaries of reality, we know we're doing it and that that's okay. You know, we have no choice or we're doing it for the television audience. But if we can come as close to the truth as possible, that would be great. Though I did say, when we were talking about the scene where I'm doing the podcasting in the hotel room, I remembered that one time I think you were like under your covers or something and you had pillows all around you. Yeah. And I said to the director, you know, the truth is, this is a very echoey room. Like she would be under her covers, like with the blanket thrown over and as many layers as possible speaking into this microphone. And he said, well, that's not good TV.
So yeah, right.
We learned that here from Lisa Z. That happens. Sometimes I might be found underneath my duvet cover or Jim in his, you know, in his closet, so to speak, because, you know, you want to soften everything around you.
Right.
But you actually had quite good kit. I mean, your character in the show, I was pretty envious, actually.
Yeah, you have a tricky little device there.
Yeah, a little handheld, like a traveling podcast.
You know, one thing I love about this series is, and podcasting in general, is somebody goes out there and cracks a cold case, and then everybody goes, oh, they can help me with my case. And so what happens is everybody comes to Alex and brings a case, and she kind of decides which one to take.
I thought it was interesting in the plot that you sort of embed her in the local print paper, mm-hmm. that you have like a partnership with them. You know, sometimes people feel like podcasts are sort of edging out print journalism and investigative journalism, but you actually bring the two together in this. And I thought that was a great thing to do.
Thank you. Yeah, I listen to, now you're going to hear just how many podcasts I listen to. I commute a lot. But Breakdown is part of the Atlanta Home Journal, and The Atlanta Journal. Anyway, it's tied into their newspaper, and I think they do a great job of sort of keeping the two together. And I felt like for the purposes of the story, it made a lot of sense that she needs the archives, she needs the old files. A lot of that part of also that's, I think, interesting in real life, but also really useful in the purposes of coming up with a mystery, because honestly, it is a hard genre to do right now. I mean, the truth is that crimes that happen today in terms of like TV crimes – It's so hard not to just have the detective Google something,
right.
And then you know where they live and you know who they, you know, were out with, and you can look at their Facebook page and see what they were doing. So to use cold cases helps a lot in the storytelling, and they didn't have phones back then. Not all of that would be on the internet. So it allows her to go into the archives and have to dig through newspaper clippings and do sort of good old-fashioned gumshoe
detective work. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, we've seen that, you know, with the teacher's pet. We saw it with Dirty John, that partnership, and I really like that part of it too.
Yeah.
You know, Dirty John was the first that I saw in terms of, you know, big production of Wondery and LA Times partnering together. And, you know, people do want more detail. Also, when, you know, in real life, they want to be able to read things as well as listen to people. And it does give far more flexibility to be able to cover a case.
And it was interesting because my friend read the articles and I listened to the podcast, and then we both watched the show on Bravo. So, I mean, it was sort of a weird, like, whichever thing is your jam, you can find it. And you know, good journalism is good journalism, however it manifests itself. And I think some of these podcasters are finding a new voice, but you never want to get away from that print. I think there's still something about the newspaper, the ink on your fingers. Does that still happen? I don't know. But
it does. I get the New York Times every weekend, and when I always take it out to brunch with me, and people stop me and say, I didn't think people still read newspapers anymore. I'm like, yep, old school here. I have to read it. Every
old school meets new school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there will be the opportunity to really layer that into upcoming episodes. I mean, I think we worked really hard to lay. Melissa Sammons is my writer, and she comes from daytime also. She used to write at Days of Our Lives, and she wrote at One Life to Live. She has a great history in daytime. And we really wanted to make sure that we created a world of characters that allow themselves to move forward and develop and grow and learn, but also sort of always come home to that home base that they have together at the Chronicle.
Yeah. And talking about old school, new school, I mean, this is a little segue that's quite neat. There is a moment that your character has with sort of an old school police officer when you get into a little bit of trouble. And I just love the dialogue between the two, where he says something to you, which, you know, I would call casual sexism, quite frankly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's corrected. You turn around and said, did he just call me, you know, young lady? And then your partner, Ben, turns around and says, oh, yeah, but he's old school. And right. It was just a great moment because that happens so often.
Often.
Yeah.
And it's always excused for being old school. I hear that a lot.
It is. But that to me isn't old school. That's somebody who's not
acknowledging it.
Acknowledging, yeah, and who you are. And so the character of Drew, he wouldn't have addressed him in the same way. So I like, there was a few like little nods there. That,
yeah. Oh, good. And I think that, you know, she does have an amateur, she is an amateur journalist. This is all new to her. So she can learn and discover stuff. And Drew brings the wisdom and the experience of really knowing his job. And that doesn't take away from their equality in what they are good at. And, mm-hmm. you know, her determination to see it through versus his a little more sit back and let's find out what happens, you know. So
right.
they complement each other well. And I really like that Drew, the character, but also Ben walked into it really playing them, sizing each other up as equals right from the
right.
beginning. And frankly, it's a hard balance because when you're writing, it's so easy to make you have the one hero who solves everything and figures it out. And sometimes it can be easy to make everyone else sort of dumber or mm-hmm. weaker or not have a good motivation for what they do. And in fact, oftentimes on TV that I watch, I find that the woman is the one who the female character gets short shrifted and that she ends up sort of like making dumb choices or saying things that are crazy and you just know that the writer was struggling. Someone had to say it. So they just make the wife say it or the girlfriend. And you're like, nah, shit, that is not how that would go.
But also just on that point, normally it is multiple people together collaborating that solve something.
Right.
It's not, as we see it, you know, normally a male hero,
right.
you know, solving it all single-handedly on his own. It just doesn't go down like that. So that's I like that part of,
yeah.
you know, it was a team collaborative yeah. effort. And he, Drew, has a daughter and you see his interaction with her and his caretaking her. There's modern twists in there. And then, of course, you've got the doggo, who I like yeah. very much. Hearst, you know, whenever a superhero doggo comes into play, it makes me very happy.
And he's definitely in charge. I feel like he already knows who did it, like right from the beginning, and he just can't tell you yet.
That's right.
Yeah.
But if any dogs could talk.
No, but it's great. You're making an extended world. All of the different personalities that are in the newsroom, the great Rebecca Staub, who plays,
she's so
what would you
talented.
Call
her,
like a gossip
she's,
columnist
she's
or
great
something?
It.
But she says that she's, I forget what her line is, but she has a great line where it's just a local commentary.
Yeah.
It's not gossip.
That's right.
But she'll be instrumental in upcoming stories too. I loved that she just got the gossip at the tennis tournament. She right. knew and she knows how to work it so that she mm-hmm. gets the information. But that ends up being a really pivotal, useful piece of information, you know, being able to talk to people and know what those relationships are and were and how people feel about each other. I think that does play a big role in, you know, we don't want to minimize that either.
Right. I hope we see more of Karen Holness, who plays yeah. your bestie, Katie?
Katie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she came lovely. Into it as the podcast aficionado, right? She was me in the show. She comes in, oh, I love podcasts. They're my guilty pleasure. And she'll definitely have a role, actually, in the one that we're working on for next year. Spoiler alert, you know, it's a case. She's a lawyer. And so we found a story that, you know, features that case that she's working on. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah, she's cool. Very talented. And then Dave Collette plays Chuck, and he is so funny to me. I told him he reminds me of a young Chevy Chase. He's just so like funny and
goofy, yeah.
but
so he's
sweet
the senior press officer, is he, at the Barrington Chronicle?
No, he's the one who's the sort of jack of all trades. He sort of is the guy who works in the news, works in the at the press and figures things out. Yes, he was.
I thought
wasn't he
the one that called himself like,
yes.
a senior press officer?
Yes.
Like, there's a nice little dressing of his title.
Right, that's right. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he's a great funny. Character in it.
And so he offers us good comic relief. So we have actually a pretty intense story that we're telling. And so to have those moments of fun and levity amongst it really, really helps balance the whole story
yeah,
out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. A lot more for us to talk about with
yes,
Ali. We could
so
go
much.
On for hours and hours. We may well bring you back. So
well,
we want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank
really excited
you.
for your movies. And for now, this is Real Crime Profiles signing out. If you like our podcast, there are a few things you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotions and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go to Facebook and like our Facebook page, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Real Crime Profile without the E. And one last thing, please tell your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214 946 4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800 799 7233.